we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. It's Friday, February 24th. This is 100.5 FM, Co-op CFRO, Vancouver, Canada. For the next hour, I am your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio today by Sinead Saunders.
Hello.
And Allison Cole.
Hi there.
On today's show, we have feature interviews, and we begin by celebrating upcoming International Pig Day with an interview with Janice Gillette of Hearts on Noses Pig Sanctuary in Mission, BC. After that, we will speak with film director Gary Charbonneau of the 2015 documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered about the recent announcement by the Vancouver Aquarium to continue keeping beluga whales captive until 2029. This has angered a lot of animal rights activists and the public who've become recently aware of some truths about the Vancouver Aquarium that they were previously unaware of. So stay tuned for those interviews in about 15 minutes. And speaking of captive belugas, Sinead, you've done some research into the lives of wild belugas to compare and contrast the lives of animals in captivity versus the wild. Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, well, as you both know, I used to volunteer at the aquarium a number of years ago now, and seeing them captive, you go, oh man, you know, they're so beautiful and that's so great. But then all you need to do is pick up an article from National Geographic or something, and you see these pictures of belugas in these massive groups in estuaries and stuff, and you go, wow, like there must be hundreds of them there. So what is it like for them being in these little tanks? Well, as it turns out, in nature, they are highly sociable, as you might guess. They form small pods with an average of 10 whales up to 25 whales. And during the summer, they can gather in hundreds or even thousands in shallow coastal areas. And in the pods tend to be unstable, so meaning that individuals will move from pod to pod. Radio tracking has even shown belugas can start out in one pod and within a few days be hundreds of miles away from that pod. So it's sort of like humans, you know, in that we have our social groups and we have them in different places, and it shifts and it changes, and it's a... Yeah, we share that in common with them, I think. They're cooperative animals. They often hunt in coordinated groups together. They're really social, chasing each other, playing, rubbing up against each other. They can dive depths up to 2,300 feet, which obviously they aren't going to be able to do in
their swimming pool.
In a swimming pool.
Not at the Vancouver Aquarium.
No. And another thing is that they've got to stay below the surface to prevent sunburn. They've got to have some...
Because they're so light-colored, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people love them because they're these white, beautiful, you know, these beautiful white animals. And yet they don't have any protection from the sun at places like the Vancouver Aquarium. They're just in these swimming pools. They can't go anywhere near 2,300 feet below the surface. And so, yeah, you know, they don't teach you these things at the aquarium, you know.
You used to work there.
Yeah, I used to volunteer there. And yeah, watching the shows, and they say, oh, we focus on education and research and stuff, but they don't go deep into this information that you would even find just in a little National Geographic article. This information is easy to come across, but the aquarium doesn't want to focus on these things and doesn't want to focus on their natural lifestyles because their lives are so unnatural in captivity, and they don't want to highlight that in any way.
This reminds me of a statement by John Nightingale in a 2014 park board meeting where he gloated that they keep their whales in natural social groups. And you just did a little description there of how big their social groups can be and that they do go between different social groups. There, nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in the aquarium, it's sort of as if somebody just sort of set you up with a roommate that maybe didn't even speak the same language as you. And then you're just stuck with them for years at a time in the same living room, basically, you know, concrete living room where there's nothing and there's just, you know, you're with each other and they play it off like, oh, these animals care about each other and their family. And maybe they do, but that doesn't change the fact that they're being horrifically abused.
Do you remember the beluga whale named Nanook who died? He was used as a sire, so as a breeding whale. He was put on a plane and sent around to various SeaWorld locations. And he actually died because he was in an incompatible social group. He was put in a tank with aggressive males and chased around for hours and ended up getting a broken jaw and suffering death from the infection.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in the wild, he could have escaped that situation.
So I have a question for you both. This is a question that was posed to me by a friend. I want to see how you would answer it. So my friend said, is the problem the way that they're treating them in captivity? What would you say to that?
As opposed to what? I just don't think they should be in captivity.
Exactly. So what would you say to someone who has like no clue, like, oh, what's the issue? Is it how they're treating them in captivity? And we're speaking here about the conditions in captivity.
You can't mimic reality in captivity. Exactly. It is not possible. It's not right. There's no good reason to be doing it. I'm completely against all animals being in captivity. And we often speak just about the cetaceans at the aquarium. I'm for releasing all the animals that can be released. It's not just cetaceans.
But when we say release, we mean into environments where they can adapt and live their natural behaviors as much as possible.
Yes. And to begin with, not to have taken them from there from the beginning.
That's where it starts at, is we as a society need to change that mindset that we as a human race have the right to take these animals, mm-hmm, to show them for display as these things for amusement.
Yeah, objects, you know, and when they're taken from the wild, they're taken from these social groups. It's like if somebody came in and took your little brother or your best friend or something, and then they're just gone.
Mm-hmm. You know? They are highly intelligent. They have formed these relationships, and none of their belugas have ever been rescued from the wild. They were originally taken in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. So I challenge everybody to phone the aquarium and ask them specifically where they got each animal from. You won't get an answer. I've mm-hmm. tried it many times.
And even if they are, you know, they'll say, oh, well, these ones were born into captivity, some of them, and or, you know, they were captured decades ago and they've been in captivity for so long, they're fine with it now. But they're not any more fine with it than any human would be,
exactly,
in solitary confinement or in prison or
and
something.
And how arrogant to try to speak for an animal anyway. Right. I mean, how are you able to say that mm-hmm. on behalf
John
of
John Nightingale
animal?
Says that.
He does.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, we can't speak for belugas either specifically because, you know, we can't get in their heads. But they're mammals just like we are. We know they're intelligent. We know they're social. And we know that if we saw our dogs or cats treated the way that those animals are, trapped in a single room for decades at a time, we would never stand for that. So
yeah, psychosis is common in animals that are held in captivity. Well, let's move on. We're also going to be having an interview in a few minutes' time with Janice Gillette of Hearts on Noses.
Janice Gillett.
She says it Gillette.
Really?
Yes, Allison, you have been corrected.
I've been wrong all this time. Okay.
Like the razor blade. Anyway, she will be on in a minute. And I just want to talk about the fact that it's National Pig Day on March the 1st. And I want people to reflect on National Pig Day, not on bacon recipes, but please on how they live in a typical factory farm. I challenge you to Google image search farrowing crates and gestation crates, and you will see that these pigs are typically raised in long shedded warehouses, concrete floors. The sows, which are pigs who are pregnant females, live in gestation and farrowing crates. They are unable to turn around for the entire time that they're in there. They don't get the ability to raise their young as they would in the wild. And in the wild, their natural behaviors are rooting around in the earth and bathing in ponds and playing. They're actually the fifth most intelligent animal. And intelligence aside, even, they're sentient. They don't enjoy being in this kind of a situation. You wouldn't do that to your dog or your cat. Why are we so speciesist in how we treat animals?
Yeah, and just on another point that, you know, I thought I knew a lot about the way that pigs are raised in factory farms, but I learned some new facts this week. I've been reading a book for an interview we're having next week that speaks about pig treatment. And I learned that, did you know that pigs, when they're stuck in those farrowing crates, or they're called iron maidens because there's iron on them, right, mm-hmm. so that they can't move. Did you know that they actually give birth to a course of 100 piglets in their lifetime?
That's an interesting fact.
And they're kept constantly pregnant, these being the pigs that are meant for breeding
mm-hmm.
sows.
Mm-hmm.
I was blown away by that. What happens with those 100 pigs? It makes me really sad. They're being bred for the industry.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this brings up the topic of feminism. If you're a feminist, include the mm-hmm. animals in your beliefs, please, because
it's exploitation of the female reproductive system.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. Okay, so I believe we have some events coming up in just a minute.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independent like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maude Barlow.
We are continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at w2media.ca.
All right, so we've got a couple of events coming up this weekend. Tomorrow, Saturday, February 25th, is the weekly Saturday Chicken Vigil. This is hosted by Vancouver Chicken Save. They gather every week at the Hallmark Chicken Slaughterhouse at Commercial and Hastings. People are gathering from 9 to 11 a.m. to bear witness to the unnecessary suffering of these birds in the name of trivial taste, habit, and profit. Signs are provided. This is a very friendly, wonderful group of people who gather there every week. So do consider joining them to raise awareness of what goes on behind the slaughterhouse walls and inspire the public to open their hearts and have some compassion for these birds. They meet at the northeast corner of Commercial and Hastings Street tomorrow morning, 9 to 11 a.m. And you can find more information on their Facebook page, Vancouver Chicken Save. Then on Sunday, speaking of the Vancouver Aquarium, they give us lots to talk about. Sunday, there will be an all-day demo at the Vancouver Aquarium calling for no more dead cetaceans. Join concerned citizens at the Vancouver Aquarium this Sunday to speak out against the aquarium's recent announcement of their plans to import more beluga whales into their facility. This news comes in spite of the aquarium's pledge a while back not to bring in any more belugas until they could explain how the last two belugas died there in their care, Aurora and Kila. They died there last November, and while their cause of death still remains unexplained, the aquarium plans to bring in 3 to 5 more belugas and claims they won't be ending beluga captivity at their facility for another 12 years until 2029. So we're going to hear more about that later in our interview with Gary Charbonneau, because there's definitely lots to talk about there. Needless to say, this is cruel and outrageous, so please do mark your calendars for this Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Lots of time to show up. Signs are provided. This is family friendly. It's a great thing to bring your kids to instead of bringing your kids out to see captive animals that are suffering.
And bring we're them friendly. Up. You can come and talk to us. We're not yelling. We're giving information.
Mm-hmm. Come out and help teach compassion to kids and the public. And refreshments and snacks are provided by plant-based natural products, I believe. Our local activist, David Isbister, makes delicious food, and he's going to be there. He's a great organizer, and he's going to be providing lots of delicious stuff. So it's going to be a good time, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. this Sunday at the Vancouver Aquarium. On Wednesday, March the 1st, there is a millennials meatless meetup, vegan sushi party at a restaurant called The General Public. This is aimed at millennials, roughly born between 1982 and 2004. The General Public is a sushi restaurant at 3289 Main Street with a great selection of veggie rolls. Registered diners will get 30% off all vegan items, not just sushi. You can order whatever you want. Obviously, this is a vegan event, so just don't order the fish. And you can go to meetup.com/meatlessmeetup to RSVP. That's meetup, meetup.com/meatlessmeetup. You get it. So do go and check them out. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks for that, Sinead. And now we're going to have our feature interview with Janice Gillette. As I said earlier, she is from the Hearts on Noses Pig Sanctuary in Mission, BC, and she actually is looking for volunteers and obviously funding as well. So let's hear that interview now.
Hi.
So can you tell us a little background on how you became the owner of a pig sanctuary?
Well, my girlfriend and I were renting a property out here in Mission and found a baby pig wandering around. Didn't find the owner, so I kept him, and that was Willie. He's the one who taught me everything about pigs, and I think it was about 10 years later I found out two pigs from our area were shipped down to the United States because there was no home to be found, and that was an eye-opener to me that no one would want two pot-bellied pigs out here, and basically started bringing them home in the year 2000.
And so since then, it grew into a full sanctuary. So how many were you getting at a time over the years to the point that it went from having possibly a few companion animals to feeling more like a sanctuary?
Well, that first year when I broke the one pig mold, which was bringing Winnie in, then after that, that year, every weekend, we were either building pens or picking up an unwanted pig. So I brought in 12 in the first year. And then it was every year after, it was finding homes or bringing them home. And it grew quite, you know, I took two pigs in from the Surrey SPCA, and they came off the horse trailer, and clearly the female was pregnant, and she had 12 babies 3 weeks later. So it doesn't take long for the amount of animals to add up.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. 12 piglets? I didn't know a mother pig could have that many.
Yeah, it's astounding. And that's almost the normal litter for the big pigs, we call them. Your listeners will be calling them farm pigs. But, that's about how many they have.
And so now you have about 40 pigs. Tell us what this means as far as monthly costs and work that you and your volunteers do.
We need we need $1,000 a month just to cover the feed bill and bedding. Pigs are on a hay or straw bedding, and they also eat it. So hay is replaced added to almost every weekend. It's a lot of feed moving in. When I say to people, I put a ton of feed away, I mean I put a ton of feed away. Our volunteers work very hard on the weekend. We're pulling wheelbarrows and cleaning pens.
Do you have enough volunteers, or are you always looking for more?
I'm always looking for more. I often post on Facebook asking people to have a couple of hours to spare on a Saturday morning. to come on out. And you're working hands-on with the pigs, so you get to pet them. You can kiss them, too, if you want.
I would love that. I want to come out for sure.
Please do.
So what kind of work do you specifically need at the moment from volunteers if someone who's listening right now would like to come out?
Well, we need everything. I need everything from administration help to work side, cleaning the pens, repairs, expanding areas, trying to fit that one more pig in. Without compromising somebody else's way of life here. We're pretty at the max right now as far as finances go and help. Can't do more unless I get more help.
Okay, so let's talk about people who are eating pigs. Some of our listeners might not be vegan yet. So many people justify eating animals because they think that the animals we eat aren't intelligent and therefore it doesn't matter if we enslave and murder them. And do you have any stories to tell about the pigs that you've come to know which can illustrate their intelligence and capacity for emotion?
Pigs are very, very emotional. And I mean, I have one young one right now, and he wakes me up in the morning by gently putting his mouth over my knee or my hand, whatever's sticking out from my blankets. He goes outside as a young pig, and then you hear him coming down the hallway at full speed on the hour to make sure no one is eating anything or he's not missing any food from the kitchen. Yeah, they like to be covered. You can tuck a pig in, put a blanket over them, and they'll do that little shift, you know, that is reflecting, oh, that feels good. Thanks for tucking.
Aww.
Very, very sweet.
That's nice. How many do you let in the house?
I have the door open all the time. There's a ramp coming right into my office here. I do have 3 pigs in the house, and it's not because they're favored. It's just because the luck of the draw when they arrived in winter, needed surgery, needed to be spayed, and somebody else took the room that was for them outside. So that's why they're in. Most people who have pigs in Canada do not have them as house pigs. They have them out in a pen by the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're quite behind compared to the States, which is probably good because there's not a lot of buyers out there. But
well, speaking of that, I spoke with you on the phone a few days ago about a frustrating aspect of running a sanctuary, that you're constantly being contacted by people who want to just dump their animals off on you without leaving any money for their care. Can you tell us about that and what it costs you to look after a pig for the rest of their life?
I had 2 days in a row people contact me to take their pig. One was a little farm pig, and their opening line to me when I asked at the phone was, well, we have to move, and we're wondering if you'll take our pig so we don't have to kill it. Now, right away, how did killing become an option in this? And clearly, it's going to put a weight on me. That little life is in my hands if I don't take her. There's not a lot of rescues taking pigs in BC. They're not a big draw for public support. And the next day, it was the same thing. I'm wondering if you can take our pig. She's aggressive. Or can you recommend a vet who can euthanize her? And I'm like, oh. You know, right away it just hits you in the heart, right? What are you going to do?
Really puts you in a corner, doesn't it?
It does put you in a corner.
Especially when you can't take on anymore and you know that the threat is that that pig will be put down.
Yeah, and, you know, I love them. I love them so much. And so the hurt of not being able to help somebody out there is horrific for me.
Mm-hmm. So then what do you do in those situations when you can't take on more? I mean, do you kind of lecture these people a bit and say this isn't how you treat a companion animal?
Yes, I do. I now, you know, I used to be really, really nice to people and try to, but now I get so angry now at their lack of compassion that I can't help myself. And, you know, right away those people heard, how can you even have killing them as an option for something to do for her?
Right.
You know, you wouldn't say that about your dog, would you? I mean, that's exactly what I said mm-hmm. back to them. And if you don't take them, you're a miserable piece of work. And if you take them, you're wonderful in their world for an hour because you've taken care of their problem. They're not going to support you. Very, very rarely do I ever hear back from anybody who's brought a pet here. I can count those people on one hand, over 20 years of doing this.
When people pig with you in these types of circumstances, do you require a donation to take care of them for the rest of their lives?
Well, you know, I try. I try and put that on them. I need a house. I need wood. I'm going to need a donation. But, you know, most of the comebacks will be, I can't, we don't have the money, we're moving. So it still is put back on me. Mm-hmm. I try to play hardball, but, you know, you're dangling the life of an animal when you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, how hard are you going to, how far are you going to take this bluff, right? If you don't do this, I'm not going to take her.
And do you think in these circumstances, these are typically pigs that were adopted when they were just little piglets and people thought they were cute and didn't think about the future of raising them and how big they would become?
Yeah, just like cats and dogs and, you know, fads and whatever is the flavor of the month. And right now for a lot of people, it is a pig. It's not about the pig. It becomes about the person. And that's why they don't stay in the home. Because once that cute little running around, jumping, spinning little baby pig starts to grow up and it gets bored and chews your box or gets in your fridge, it's somebody they don't want anymore.
Right. That's frustrating. Yeah. And it's definitely all too common with animals, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, Esther has really opened the eyes. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are following Esther back in Ontario, large Yorkshire, who was sold as a pet pig and turned out to be a 700-pound farm pig. A lot of people are buying these farm pigs, but they don't understand what it takes to keep one. Not everybody is going to have an Esther in their house. And even keeping an Esther in a paddock is going to require strong boards. And it's hard because taking in a farm pig really is a $5,000 bill. And I don't have a $5,000 bill tree outside because that's what's going to take for a shed big enough for a full-grown pig and paddocks to hold them.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I want to talk about turning people vegan from coming to your sanctuary, or even at the very least, turning people off of eating pork. And you told me a story earlier about how a pig will not go into an area that it can't turn around in. Can you tell us that story and relate that to how pigs are commonly raised in our factory farming industry here?
Yeah. I learned a long time ago when I brought home a potbelly pig and he slept outside of that little house that I had picked up for him because he could not turn around in it. And I knew this because when I crawled in that house, I could see his bite marks on the one side. So he was trying to get rid of that obstacle. So, you know, if I give myself 1 minute of thinking about the billions of farm pigs in those gestation crates, I go crazy because surely they are going mad. They don't like confinement. Confinement to a prey species is death. So all those rub marks and red welts that you're seeing in pictures on these beautiful big pigs is probably from them exploding emotionally to try to get out,
right,
to die trying to get out.
And if anyone has watched any of the pig save movements that are now growing around the world, when the activists get video footage of the pigs inside their transport trucks on their way to slaughter, many of them have scars all over their body, which we know are from being beaten to go into places that they're too afraid to go into, and possibly even burned with cattle prods, electric cattle prods, which we know they use in these industries to get them to move when they're afraid.
And they're babies.
Yeah.
They're 5 and 6 month old babies. Mm-hmm. I mean, humanity's got to realize that they're eating babies. Everything in meat is a baby, is killed before adulthood. And everything that is eaten in meat is a docile animal. We're not raising tigers to eat.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad.
It is.
It is sad. And, you know, people, when you see those magnets or calendars of baby farm pigs or pigs that have ears with like a zigzag cut in their ears, that zigzag is caused by marking the pig with a double razor scissor that cuts the ear and takes pieces out of the ear from one side to determine what litter they came from, and the other side is cut to determine what vaccines are given.
I had no idea. I've never heard that before in all my 2 years of research into this.
Yeah, and, you know, those calendars, all those babies that you see, they're all dead by now. Don't mm-hmm. buy them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the babies, because before I was vegan 2 years ago, I used to say that I loved animals, and I used to love watching baby animal videos. In fact, my boyfriend at the time and I would look them up purposely and watch them. And then we'd go, oh, you want to go for dim sum? And I'd order my pork and prawn dumpling and think nothing of it. I was so disconnected. And we're hoping to inspire people on this show to recognize the disconnect and force yourself to watch footage of how animals are raised and slaughtered in order to grow your compassion to the point that you take yourself out of funding that system.
Right. And, you know, just so we can live without bacon. That's the biggest issue with pigs. People don't want to lose that. They don't want to make the connection because they love that. They think they can't to live without bacon.
I know.
Well, somebody is not living because of your bacon.
I know. And I always say to people, I love the taste of bacon too. I'll probably never stop loving it. I've just decided I'm not going to partake in that. It's cruel.
Right. I mean, it takes will to do right.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing is easy in life. So to do right, you need to have willpower.
Good.
And that's basically what you can live off. You can just go by that. It takes will to do right. Nothing's easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you tell our listeners how they can help by way of volunteering? Or we already spoke about that, but donations, where they can find your website or any upcoming events that you may have?
Heartsonnoses.com is our website. Pretty easy. It's exactly how it's spelled. We named the sanctuary after a little pig who's clearly, when you looked at his nose, it was an upside down heart, and my heart is on that nose. So that's where Hearts on Noses came from. You'll find us on Facebook along with my name, Janice Gillette. And you can contact me by email or go through our website. And volunteer. Come on out on Saturday if that's your day off. Get a hold of me. Let me know when you're available. We need volunteers from working outside to hosting fundraisers.
That's great.
Yeah.
How many people would you like at a time if somebody wanted to come as a group to volunteer?
Work parties, there's no limit.
Great. Okay. Well, we will have an Animal Voices team coming out for sure. I'll plan something and invite all the activists as well.
Awesome. Maybe we can turn it into a potluck and, and have a nice veggie meal, vegan meal after.
Absolutely. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Janice. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jen. Have
okay.
a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So let's get into some news here.
Weren't we going to have a story?
Oh,
let's go with the story first.
I'm waiting for the story.
Oh, God. Okay, I do have a story. So those of you who are animal rights activists probably follow somebody who goes by the Facebook name Christopher Sebastian. I think he lives in New York. He's one of my favorite Facebook posters. He's really witty and very intelligent. And so I guess he took a plane trip recently. And so he quoted the conversation between himself and somebody sitting behind him. So it says, me sitting in luxurious exit row, reclined seat, white woman behind me. Hey, I don't have as much space. You need to put your seat up. Me turning around. Did you know the average pig lives their entire life in a space no bigger than an airplane seat? Woman, what does that have to do with me? Me, do you eat bacon? Woman, yes. Me, then no, I can't put my seat up.
Wow, good one.
I'll be on a plane soon. Maybe I'll try that. Although no one ever complains when I put my seat back, so
think
I might not get the
opportunity.
Think about
using activists in all your daily life activities.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Thanks for that. So you are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And now we have some news.
Mm-hmm. So there was some interesting news from Germany this week. Germany's federal minister for the environment, Barbara Hendricks, has proposed a ban on meat and fish, animal flesh during official political meetings. In an email to senior political officials, Hendricks's office stressed that the ministry must set an example to be more environmentally conscious by acknowledging the damaging effects of meat production, saying, "We're not telling anyone what they should eat, but we want to set a good example for climate protection because vegetarian food is more climate friendly than meat and fish." While this proposal would only affect a handful of official events, it sparked controversy, of course, amongst fellow politicians, particularly Germany's agriculture minister, Christian Schmidt, who called the proposal a form of nanny statism. Last year, Schmidt called for a ban on plant-based products that reference meat, citing that terms such as vegetarian schnitzel were misleading to the public. If we're concerned with public interest, however, you'd think that protecting our environment would be a higher priority than protecting profits for animal agriculture industries. Animal agriculture is a leading cause of climate change and environmental degradation globally. Livestock produce methane, which is 86 times more potent than carbon dioxide. The livestock sector alone accounts for 14.5% or more of all greenhouse gases. That's more than the entire transportation sector put together. So every time you hear people talking about driving less or flying less for the environment, that's nothing compared to eating less meat and animal products in general. It's not just methane that contributes to animal farming's carbon footprint. It's the fossil fuels required to ship, process, package, and refrigerate the meat as well. Our air and waterways are also riddled with pollution due to runoff from factory farm waste. Now, the German government is far from the first governing body to attempt to lessen animal agriculture's environmental footprint by instructing citizens to eat fewer animal products. China, which is one of the fastest growing markets for meat in the world, recently released dietary guidelines instructing residents to limit their intake of meat and eggs. The Netherlands, the UK, and Sweden have all released similar guidelines, citing the environmental impact of meat production in their reasoning.
And the US tried to. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they tried to a few years ago, and they failed because the livestock lobby fought against it and prevailed. So their new guidelines were published in 2015 without any mention of sustainability or meat reduction.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm. And
profits.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And likewise, we haven't seen anything like that here in Canada yet, but hopefully we see more governments taking this kind of initiative, putting the health of our planet and the people who live on it before a concern for big business and big business profits and harmful traditions. And with regards to nanny statism and people's right to personal choice, which is something that people talk about a lot, meat consumption hardly seems like a personal choice, does it? When it, like, if it's causing this much damage to the only planet we all have to live on, then I'd hardly call it a personal choice.
It's one of the most selfish things you can do. And who doesn't get a choice in the matter is the living being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of the living beings involved, there was an abuse complaint lodged against Colchester County Animal Auction Facility in Nova Scotia. The abuse complaint was filed by Animal Justice against the Atlantic Stockyards in Nova Scotia. There was a video recorded by a Halifax woman on December 3rd that allegedly depicts a worker prodding a cow with a cane as she was being loaded onto a truck. So the stockyard owner, Sean Firth, said that he adamantly disagrees that any abuse took place. Animal Justice said the cow in question had been aggressively jabbed with a cane in her sensitive underside, punched in her engorged udder, shoved multiple times with a metal gate, all while workers yelled at the distressed animal. I've seen this video, and that sounds pretty accurate to me. The stockyard owner said the activity involved is a normal procedure that is sometimes necessary to move cattle forward while being loaded onto trucks. We try to be as gentle as possible at all times. And he emphasizes that the SPCA is welcome and the CFI are welcome to inspect our place at any time, you know. But I think that points to the bigger problem here, because Nova Scotia law prohibits abusing animals, and federal law prohibits beating animals or otherwise causing them undue suffering during transport. But as Anna Pippis said of Animal Justice, this kind of abuse occurs every day on farms and at live auctions and slaughterhouses across the country. But most often it goes unobserved or overlooked. As you know, as the stockyard owner says, this is standard practice, and it would be nonsensical for him to be involved in animal abuse. And his only motivation, he says, is to provide a service to farmers in Atlantic Canada. But yeah, that's the thing. They're providing a service. They don't care. They don't care about the animals. The animals are objects. The animals are livestock.
They're ultimately providing a service for consumers of animal flesh.
Mm-hmm. So
if you're listening to this, you might be one of them.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, when an animal has only ever known exploitation and cruelty and has never known love, they're afraid. I've had friends who've worked undercover on farms. The animals don't move when they're told to move because they're afraid. Mm-hmm. They don't know where they're going next and what's going to happen.
They don't want to.
Because it's never been good.
Mm-hmm. They don't
totally
want to
agree with that.
Yeah.
They don't want to be in that situation any more than you or your dog or cat would want to be. And yeah, again, you know, the president of the Nova Scotia Federation of Agriculture said that the video depicts workers not attacking the cow, but simply moving her along, moving the livestock along. And yeah, people say it's nothing. So, you know, don't buy animals like products, please, because it just results in them being treated as objects.
Yes,
and it's just
vegan.
Not right.
So now we have an interview with a Vancouver-based animal rights advocate and filmmaker, Gary Charbonneau, who created the 2015 documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, which you can find on YouTube. And let's listen to that interview now.
As most Vancouverites know, the Vancouver Aquarium's last remaining belugas died a few months ago, leaving the tanks empty. The aquarium has belugas on loan to SeaWorld, and I apologize for wording it that way, as I still cannot understand how one can own wildlife. Dr. John Nightingale, Aquarium Chief Executive Officer and President, said he hopes to bring in 3 to 5 belugas, but the facility plans to discontinue the display of belugas by 2029. This is the same year the aquarium's lease expires with the Vancouver Park Board. How do you feel about this decision, Gary?
Well, it's very confusing and nonsensical. Why would you spend the taxpayers' money and the donors' money? I think it's approximately $25 million in expanding tanks that, you know, you won't be using in just 13 years. So I think it's gross mismanagement of funds, and they should really be putting that money towards scalable technologies.
And why do you think it is that they are expanding the tanks? Do you think it might be strategic because there's an upcoming park board meeting where a decision may be made on the future of captivity?
Yes, exactly. There's no doubt. So they're just trying to plan ahead and say the right things to try to placate the public and park board commissioners, but it's not working. I think this has really just frustrated everyone. You also have to remember there's still a Senate bill on the table that may just end captivity this summer. So once again, for Mr. Nightingale to move forward and expand the tanks with a possible plebiscite, a Senate bill, and the fact that it seems like most Vancouverites now, not just over half, but it seems like the majority of Vancouverites are tired of captivity, yet it's just Mr. Nightingale pushing his own agenda.
And he said that the new belugas will be brought in primarily for research purposes and will be non-breeding. And in your documentary, Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, you feature many interviews with cetacean experts and animal behaviorists who stated that most valid research is actually done in the wild and that captive cetacean research is less than optimal because the animals aren't in their natural surroundings engaging in natural behaviors. So have you spoken recently again to any of these scientists who will reiterate those feelings right now, given this announcement?
The problem with that announcement is that it's confounding in that John Nightingale, the CEO, says that they're really going to focus on research now. But the question is weren't they focused on research for the past 30 to 40 years? This is what they were supposed to do, was research. And now he's saying, we're really going to focus on research. So the question is, what were you really doing before then? And this is just more rhetoric coming from the aquarium. Like, you know, saying something like, we're really going to focus on research now. It just tells you that they were never really focused on research before. But as what you had just said, research inside of captivity doesn't bring forward meaningful results because the environments are so different. And this is why I found, doing my documentary, a lot of scientists who studied belugas or any cetacean in captivity, and then they were studying them in the wild, they stopped studying them in captivity because they said, we just have to retest everything anyways, and most of it really didn't apply. So, yeah, it's just trying to appease the public once again with this, saying we're really going to focus on research. It's about display and aquatic circus is what it is.
And I had to laugh when I read a recent statement by John Nightingale that those who oppose captivity are not credible. He said this a few times, and I actually reached out to Dr. Lawrence Dill, a biologist who studies behavioral ecology, and was interviewed in your documentary about what he thought about being referred to as not credible. And his response was, you know, I am an opponent of captivity, and I would believe that I actually do have quite a bit of credibility. So this reminds me of when I have had encounters with Vancouver Aquarium staff and I ask what they think about your documentary, and the immediate answer that they always say is that it's completely false, all of it. And I have to point out to them there are interviews in the documentary with cetacean experts. Are they truly calling them dishonest? How do you feel about this?
Well, first of all, yeah, if you look at the documentary and you look at the people I interviewed, they're top quality biologists and scientists, and this is exactly why I interviewed them. But once again, I think the public is just getting used to Mr. Nightingale and Mr. Wright, and you know they just say things to try to pull on the emotional heartstring of the public, and it's really just a lot of deceptions. The type of people that are against captivity and against this type of movement right now for short-term periods for belugas and captivity and things like that, this is not really healthy for these animals. And so, and Professor Lawrence Dill, I mean, these people are highly qualified. So for Mr. Nightingale to say that and exactly on the opposite spectrum, who is talking on behalf of the aquarium? Because what I can tell you is last year when their Pacific white-sided dolphin, Hannah, died after the necropsy, they had said that she died of reasons that are common in the wild. Well, I reached out to some dolphin experts, and they said that there was never a single necropsy from a wild Pacific white-sided dolphin that had the same reasons of why Hannah died. So who's, you know, but this is what the Vancouver Aquarium is saying, yet they never have anything to, you know, qualify their statements. Mm-hmm. They're just blanket statements. And they kind of have to do that. When you're running an aquatic circus disguised as a conservation center, you have to be very, illuminative with your responses.
Right. Well, I can't believe that John Nightingale has the nerve to suggest that activists may be responsible for poisoning the belugas. And to this day, he's still saying this. While the aquarium has been running a program where visitors can pay to interact physically with the belugas, exposing both parties to potential infections, yet this is never mentioned in any news articles where it's discussed what has happened to the belugas, and they still don't have an answer. What do you think about that?
It's very sad that, you know, the police now have come out twice and said we couldn't find any evidence whatsoever that there has been any break and enter or there's been any poison done maliciously, nothing. And yet here's the Vancouver Aquarium saying, oh, we still believe this. So it tells you either A, they're being untruthful, B, they don't have very good security, and was it done internally? If there's no break in and enter, there's no point in Mr. Nightingale pointing his finger at the activists. He may have to look internally now, and he hasn't been saying that. And so that's one thing that's really important to notice here is that is Mr. Nightingale pointing to one of his own? That's a good question.
I just think it's so silly to think that those who spend a good portion of their lives working for free, spending their own money even, to fight for the autonomy of these animals would do something like poison them. I think it really discredits him as a person when he comes out and says even more foolish things like this.
Well, and once again, with the police coming out twice and saying that there is no evidence, I think he's just trying to confuse the public. I don't even know if we're ever going to get an answer. And once again, here's the Vancouver Aquarium touting themselves to be, you know, one of the best world-class veterinary type of marine science centers. And they can't figure out what happened to these two belugas. And they have an encounter program where, as you touched on, people are touching these animals. That's exceptionally dangerous. It's called zoonosis. Transmission of disease could happen both ways. And there's a slight chance, I just wrote an article on this, that Q and Aurora may have passed away because of the encounter program. Maybe they caught something from someone. But the whole encounter program should stop. And for Mr. Nightingale to even consider bringing back any animals right now and without even knowing what happened to Kila and Aurora is dangerous.
Yeah, and it's just so irresponsible and disrespectful to exploit the animals in that way as well.
Mm-hmm. I do agree.
So is there anything else that you want to let the public know if they're hearing this kind of information for the first time and they want to get involved in our side of things and help the animals? What can they do?
I think it really comes down to the Vancouver Aquarium directors, you know, making change. It's obvious that Mr. Nightingale has now fully admitted that change is coming in 2029. But the question is, why isn't it happening right now? Why are we expanding tanks for 13 years? It doesn't make sense. I think the public should really communicate with the Vancouver Aquarium directors and say, we want change now. It's time to retire Mr. Nightingale, retire Mr. Wright, bring in some new management, stop the expansion, and invest in technologies and innovation that will bring in more tourists, create more jobs, have more money for research and rescue. And that's really going into a direction that doesn't have captivity and doesn't involve buying dolphins from Japan. It's about an actual marine science center that's run properly and professionally. And I think that's really our next step is bring in new management.
And where can the public find your documentary?
VancouverAquariumUncovered.com.
Great. And that's available for free to the public. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Gary. We look forward to talking to you in the future as things progress, and best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much, Jen. Okay. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
So if you've been moved by this interview with Gary Charbonneau, local filmmaker, and want to help the cetaceans who are trapped in captivity, please sign and share our petition on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, to end whale and dolphin captivity in Canada. This is an urgent matter to support Bill S-203. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for both of those interviews, Jen. I think the questions you asked were very insightful. I always love hearing what you're going to say in your interviews that you've prepared for us. So as you had mentioned before, March 1st is National Pig Day, and that's why we had Janice on the show today to speak about her sanctuary, Hearts on Noses, which is located in Mission. And I love that you said that we're going to do an Animal Voices work party there.
Absolutely.
Are we going to invite just like everyone? Because I've been to a work party there where we had about 25 people. This was a really long time ago when I first got to know Hearts and Noses, a long time ago, and she only had 24 pigs then. So that was a lot of pigs ago, because she has over 40 now.
Almost 45, yeah. I think. Yeah, so definitely, yeah. She needs help and she needs money. So let's go.
She totally needs help. So I was so inspired by the work that she does there. She runs that place basically on her own. I was so inspired that I opted to sponsor a pig. You can do that on her website at Hearts and Noses, and it's about $30 a month. And you know what I thought to myself when I did that? I thought, you know, how long does it take me to work to make $30? Like an hour and a half. Is that worth my time and my money once a month to go towards the care of these pigs? Because this is one place where you know that when you're donating to this sanctuary, it's going straight to the pigs. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel like, yeah, I'm going to do this.
She's because, so dedicated.
You know, there's so many sanctuaries out there that have these opportunities to sponsor animals. And this one, and I've done it for other sanctuaries as well, but definitely chose this one. And I had to stop after years and years. I had to stop donating at one point. But now I'm in a spot again where I realize, you know what? I'm going to restart that monthly donation.
I'll join you in that.
Yeah, I used to sponsor a pig named Pearl. I don't know if she's still there. So when we can go and hopefully see Pearl. But I think Lucy's still there. That's the big pink pig that you had her pictured with.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Lucy lives in the house.
You know, with all the money vegans save eating a plant-based diet, which is the cheapest diet in the world, you can definitely afford to sponsor a pig.
And even if you eat pigs, you should sponsor a pig.
You should definitely sponsor a pig if you eat pigs. And you should keep pork off your fork.
Yeah. So anyways, thanks for those interviews. You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. So next week is March the 3rd for our show. And I will be presenting a special show for International Women's Day, which will be occurring on March the 8th. This show will be dedicated to exploring feminist issues within animal rights, and we will be having a feature interview with Carol J. Adams. She's a very well-known eco-feminist. She will be speaking to us about the various intersections between animal rights and women's rights. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. We mentioned our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. You can also go onto our website where you can download or listen to podcasts while you're cleaning, like Jen does, mm-hmm. or while you're just walking in the snow, like my sister does.
Nice.
And you can also find us on iTunes as well. Stay in touch with us also at Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And Jen, you wanted to announce today's song.
Yes, we always end with a song. Many people go through life pretending while pretending not to be pretending. I just love that phrase. I'll say it again. Pretending while pretending not to be pretending. And we often talk about those people on the show. So today, this song is dedicated to those who make their living off being dishonest. It's called The Pretender, and it's by the Foo Fighters. Enjoy.
Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals. Sending your stay.
face that you have to face.